ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for tonight's Comic Book Club! And now, here are your hosts, Bea LaPage, Justin Thayer, and Alex Delbert!
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Hey, everybody, I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And that's our man in the booth, Booth Ben! Finally, back in a booth after weeks and weeks.
Great to have him back. And we're back in Chinatown where we started.
Yeah. Years ago.
Yep.
Well, we used to sell lanterns.
I'm thinking of Big Trouble in Little China.
That was nice. Well, this is a completely new venue for us, completely new space. Fontana's in New York. We're really excited to be here.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I just wish we could get the Fontana's name out there a little bit more.
Yeah. Are the microphones off?
Huh? Yeah, we wanted them off, right? This is just a prop. Hey,
guys, how come my mic doesn't work?
Huh? It's another new change of the show. You're not to be heard.
You're to be seen,
but not heard.
Right.
Feels weird holding it.
Yeah? Are they working? Right. Can you guys hear the mics?
Oh, this is a classic Zalbin phrase.
I got you guys good. New venue and new challenges.
Yep.
Very exciting.
I'm going to still talk into it.
What's the newest thing that's ever happened to you?
The newest thing that's ever happened to me? That doesn't make much sense.
I don't know. I'm trying to kill time here.
I'm in the present. That's a confusing question. Boothman?
Boothman, how are we doing?
Well, I'm great.
Your microphone works.
Yeah, your mic works.
Cool. Do Justin and Pete's microphones work, everybody?
No, they don't.
Great. All right, well, we'll share one microphone. We'll see what happens, I guess.
Yeah,
that'll be fun.
That's how Streisand does
it. Nobody can hear you.
I'm still using it.
I can still kind of hear you guys, so.
Oh, well, that's
cool. Oh, good.
Wow, that's what the Rolling Stones tech guy said.
Great. Well, we'll keep working on it.
Compare us to Rolling Stones?
Yeah, I'm Keith Richards.
Oh, boy.
I don't know, and then you're the other guys.
Guys, I'm very excited about the guest that we have tonight. He writes probably our favorite comic here on the show, Lock and Key.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, Joel!
Yeah!
Welcome.
Hello. Joe, please. Sit down. We don't know if our mics are working, but you should sit down anyway. How's it going?
Test.
Nice.
We start every show with a quick test.
Right. Great. Joe, thank you so much for coming on the show, and thanks for coming down. As we said, Lock and Key is, I don't know, it's my favorite comic book.
Yeah, I wonder why.
I didn't want to speak for you guys.
No, it is also, we've raved about it for years, literally, since it came out.
It's my favorite, too.
Good.
Well, I was actually curious. I don't know if I've ever heard, how did you first come up with the idea for Lock and Key?
Is it a documentary?
When you locked out of your house, you didn't have any keys.
Good.
And then you thought, what if I had all the keys?
Boothman's back.
At some point, I'll come up with a really good story about how Lock and Key came up with, and that will be the origin story. But I haven't been able to figure anything out yet, and the truth is so boring. You know, essentially, I was a failed writer. I had spent 3 years writing this novel, big epic fantasy, which became a huge international bestseller in my imagination. But in real life, it was turned down by every publisher in New York. It was turned down by every publisher in London. For an extra kick in the pants, it was turned down in Canada. And So I had completely sort of washed out as a novelist. I had some success with short stories, and I managed to break through with this one short story, which got in some best of collections, and which attracted the notice of a scout at Marvel. Mm-hmm.
Scouts look like? Are they like scouts in Stratego?
This scout was
Stratego. They can defuse bombs. They're number 8. They're easy to kill unless you're a bomb. Then they get the bombs.
I've never played Stratego.
Really?
Yeah.
Anybody? Great game. Thank you.
Totally
you two guys. Yeah. Let's get a game going afterwards. Only the longest bearded men in the crowd have played Stratego with me.
I think it's safe to say that Warner Brothers will spend $150 million on it.
Absolutely.
Bingo. I'm developing it as a movie. Yeah.
It's starring Tyler Kitsch as the Stratego.
Good.
Yeah. I'm good. So you're working. You're creating Stratego.
A bunch of creators from other fields had been hauled in by this talent scout, including Jason Aaron, and they wrote for a Marvel audition title. There were two secret edition titles. There was Spider-Man Spider-Man Unlimited and X-Men Unlimited. And
those were – so like they would put new writers on there just to
be
like –
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The secret of those titles were there were two stories in each issue, and the whole idea was to give guys who had not written comics a chance to sort of see if they could do it. Wow. and make some money at the same time. So wow. Marvel kind of stuck out these writers, these first-time writers. And so anyway, so I did a story for Spider-Man Unlimited, an 11-page story. It was the absolute worst piece of garbage I've ever written in my life.
What happened?
Oh, yeah, my God. It was so horrid. It was about this. It was about a reality show called The Fanboys. And
uh-oh.
It was like three out-of-shape comic book losers.
Let's cool it with out-of-shape. I'll take loser.
Anyway, they try to imitate the deeds of superheroes only without superpowers, and they make fools of themselves, and they crash a helicopter in New York and everything. And it was only saved by some wonderful art from the late Seth Fisher, who actually somehow made my script funny, which it wasn't. I tried. But and the funny thing is even though it was like the worst thing I ever had published, after that, the comic book field had its hooks in me, and I really wanted to experience that again because I discovered I loved putting together a comic script.
Oh, cool.
And, you know, and growing up, all my favorite creators were comic book guys. They were Neil Gaiman and Alan Moore and Chris Claremont and Frank Miller. The only publisher I cared about as a kid was Vertigo.
Yeah. You know? And, nice.
And so I was desperate to get another chance to write more comics. And I worked up some pitches for Marvel. I remember one of them was for a Baby Hulk storyline. It would have been a Hulk. Because I had a little kid myself at that time, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was a three-year-old who could Hulk out? And just imagine how tragic that would be, because you have no emotional control at three. And, you know, and
three.
So... but Marvel passed on that. Marvel also passed on my weird haunted house story, which was kind of like a house with like these mutant keys in it.
Ooh,
and
wait.
And
yeah, wait
kept,
for
it. I kept thinking about that story after Marvel passed on it, some other publishers who have, you know, sort of like letters for a name and you know, months passed, and I would keep thinking up new keys and new ideas about this house. And eventually I had a novel come out called Heart-Shaped Box. Around the same time it came out, IDW contacted me and said, we'd love to do something with your short stories. We've had luck adapting short stories by writers.
Cool.
And I said, wait, don't adapt my short stories. Let me pitch on something else. I got this great idea for a haunted house story, and it will last exactly six issues. So that's how Lock and Key got started.
And you think that's a bad story? That's an awesome story.
I'm actually kind of curious. Was the original Marvel pitch, was that tied to something? Was that like supposed to be a Doctor Strange story or something?
It was
like
supposed
that?
To be an original Vertigo-like title for
Marvel. Oh, okay.
I mean, I also pitched Marvel on an idea for X-Men Unlimited in which, and I still think this would be a great comic. And if Tom Brevoort is out there and is listening to this,
really wants me for
Marvel, I had an idea for a story in which the house would be the mutant. It would be a kid who grew up and loved his childhood home, and then when his mutant powers kicked in, he essentially becomes the house. And so, you know, in the story, in this standalone story, Kitty Pryde would show up with some other X-Men looking for the mutant and not able to find him. And meanwhile, the house would have all these crazy things would be happening, the house doors slamming and all this. And gradually they figure out the house is the kid they're looking for.
Uh-huh. And they're like, my God, we're inside of his butt.
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
That's the cliffhanger at the end.
Yeah.
So, maybe. I don't know, that's pretty good.
Oh, you're as blue as
mine. Maybe they would have said yes if I had pitched them on that.
Probably. Yeah. How did you get hooked up with Gabriel Rodriguez?
My friend Chris Ryle, he wasn't my friend then, I didn't know him, but the editor of Lock and Key, showed me some artists, and he showed me some guys who did blood really well, like guys with like grotty looking Wolverine guys with like blood dripping down them and stuff.
Cool.
But Gabe didn't really do that. What Gabe did was he drew people who were sort of adorable.
Yeah.
And I thought, this is the guy I want.
The juxtaposition of
most people don't understand. I think a lot of people misunderstand how horror works. I think that they think that if you just throw enough entrails at the reader, they'll be scared. I'm all for entrails. You know, I've got no problem with that. But I think that you have to care about the source of the entrails first. You know, that you have to identify with a character and love them and care about them. And then it really hurts when they're hanging from a meat hook.
Yeah.
You know, but you got to make people care first. And in some ways, Lock and Key is like the world's longest, meanest practical joke. Because, you know, we've everyone.
What are you gonna do to us?
I worry for these characters that I don't want to see on meat hooks.
It's you know, when you watch movies in the 80s, films like Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, you see these disposable teenagers who you don't care about, and you actually, you know, you've got the slut, you've got the jock, you've got the smart kid, you've got the geek, you've got the virgin. And you know, it's
I'm like four of those people.
The
slut.
The
slut and virgin. Figure that out.
That is tough. You have these characters, and you never really care for them, and you wind up rooting sadistically for the, you know, for Freddy Krueger, you know, and you someone gets on the meat hook and you laugh about it, and I kind of hate that. I hate the idea of the audience being enlisted on the side of the bad guy, and so Lock and Key is an attempt to do the teen slasher film where you're forced to get to know the kids, you know, and so then when bad things happen, it's not just the slut and the virgin. These aren't disposable people. Their lives mattered to you, and their deaths will matter too.
Spoiler.
Yeah, and there might be a few. Anyway.
Cool it.
Now,
cool it.
I'm curious. Following up on that, do you care about Dodge? Do you feel for Dodge, or do you just think he/she is despicable at this point?
In Clockworks, we go back to the future. We go back to the 80s, and we get the backstory of Dodge, and we discover something terrible, which is that Dodge was a really great kid. You know, loving, forgiving, decent, funny, relaxed. You know, sort of basically the kid everyone wanted to be in high school, and too cool for him. He's so cool he doesn't even know it. And then there's this tragic accident and he becomes this twisted Freddy Krueger type figure. And a lot of people die. I mean, if you haven't read Clockworks, you know, I'm not going to say who, but a lot of people die back in the 80s, and a lot more are going to die in the present day.
Oh, man, stop saying that.
But the thing is, I believe, you know, I believe that stories have to be about something more than themselves. You want a story to ask interesting questions. I think everyone has had this experience of being in high school and then, you know, the night of the prom, four teenagers get wiped out in a drunk driving accident. And you go, oh, my God, you know, how the hell could that happen?
Demon Gate is what I always say.
Yeah, right. Or exactly.
Doesn't make people feel better.
or it's either a drunk driving accident or it's demon possession. Mm-hmm. Or both. Right. You know, and so Lock and Key partially explores that idea of the high school tragedy that, you know, everyone is sort of aware of.
Now, getting back to the art a little bit, his art is, you know, you've mentioned such a cool kind of take on it. After a while, did it start inspiring your writing a little bit? Because it felt like it did a little bit, especially with the Calvin and Hobbes stuff.
Yeah.
And, like, that, it was such an amazing... Like, having these characters drawn so well and also a little cartoony and fun, and then having all the horrible things happen was such a crazy play on emotions. And
in the next couple of months, we have an issue coming out, a standalone story called Lock and Key Grindhouse. And, and it's a throwback to the crime comics of the 50s and 60s. And you'll never believe Gabe drew it. It's so completely different from his style.
Amazing.
I mean, the great thing about him is he can reinvent his style to do almost anything.
Wow.
Do you love him? Nearly as much as Pete does.
Yeah, Pete loves him a lot.
Well, I definitely feel in some ways like Gabe and I share unibrain. You know, like we are the same. You know, we are the old married couple where I start a sentence and he finishes it.
Aww. That is, you know, lovely.
And I've learned more.
So he's like, having a crazy conversation wherever he is.
He's probably freaking out his family.
Yeah, definitely.
He's just, you know, the the other thing is you know, when I started, I had the sort of arrogant writer notion that I was sort of the auteur and Gabe was just going to follow my instructions. And it's been a great lucky break for me to discover that that's not the case early on. I've learned as much about those characters from the way Gabe has drawn them as he's ever learned from anything I've written about him. And his sense for how to stage a suspenseful scene, I think, is unmatched in comics.
Yeah, I mean, there were literally that first issue where there was that thing where he's sitting by the water, and all of a sudden I jumped, and I'm reading a comic book. Like, that's how amazing of not only writing but the art to suck you in like that, where you're jumping like you're in a movie theater.
And that's the last time he's jumped.
Yeah. Pete lost the ability to jump after that. It was really sad.
Especially, everything is so tense, and he's the most darling man in person.
He's a sweet guy, you know, and I always kind of enjoy knowing you know what a loving family guy he is. I always enjoy, you know, saying, well, now we're gonna shove the kid in front of the school bus.
Yeah. You know, and make it look like your son. Did you say that?
Oh, geez.
What? I'm not writing it.
Weirdo. Yeah.
But you guys have created such an amazing comic that, like, I'm nervous to read it. Like, I'm so invested, but I'm also so nervous.
It's like asking the hot girl out to prom.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what's going to happen. It's going to be a horror show. I know that much, but.
Yeah, I mean, I just hope we can stick the landing. You know, everyone's had fun with it so far. And you know, what happens with a lot of long-running series is then you get the wet fart in the bathtub at the end, you know?
Hear you.
What?
You know, I mean, I'm actually planning.
You heard it here first. That's the end of Lock and Key.
Is that the title of the last arc, is the wet fart?
The thing which we've had a lot of arguments about is I'm replacing Tyler with Robert Patrick in the last arc.
We weren't going to ask about that.
He's going to be a cousin who comes in. And the thing is, he will still have the same chemistry.
Yeah, definitely.
With,
no one will ever.
All the other characters and
stuff.
Won't
miss a beat.
I don't think so. I'm feeling good about it.
Let's talk about the end a little bit. I'm sure you get this all the time, but what, you know, even beyond what you're planning for the end of Lock and Key, what's your philosophy on it? Is it plan it out in advance? I wrote, you know, the J.K. Rowling, I wrote this chapter years ago, or is it let's see what happens and let that augment the ending?
Fucking kill them all and let God sort it out.
I don't know if that works for the written word.
Sorry, no spoilers. I forget who said this, but I think it was George R. R. Martin in a recent interview he talked about.
He said, "What am I doing?"
Hoping crazy for a happy shit. Ending, I probably shouldn't have brought him up. He said in a recent interview that there are two kinds of writers. There are writers who are architects who plan and map and they know everything that's going to happen. And then there are writers who are gardeners who plant things and they kind of know what they're going to get, but they don't exactly know how it's going to grow. And that's always been my philosophy. I always feel like I'm going to create the situation, I'll have the characters there, and then they will organically find their way to the end. And that's the safest way to do things, because if you plan things out, then you start to play it safe. You know, and I decided years ago, if I put a character in a situation and they couldn't hack it, they were going to have to fucking die, and that was going to be the end. And I wasn't going to twist reality or play games with possibility to keep them going. Nothing like, you know, in a TV series, you have a character you love, you know that person is signed to a 3-season contract and they're not going to die. If you really think about it, you know they're not going to die. No one is signed to a contract in a comic book. Anyone can die, and that's how it ought to be.
Was there anything that happened that surprised you during the writing of the series?
Anything that surprised me during the writing of the series? No.
Cool.
No, well, not really.
Let me ask you about a specific issue. The issue.
Yeah. No, wait. Oh, yeah. I was a little bit.
I feel better now.
I was a little bit surprised that Sam came so close to getting. This is a terrible spoiler. Sorry. If you haven't read, just fast forward through the video or whatever for a couple seconds. I was a little surprised at how close Sam came to getting revenge. I never imagined that he would be such an engine of rage. And, you know, I basically thought at the end of Welcome to Lovecraft that there wasn't that much more for Sam to do. And it turned out that, you know...
I almost did a spit take there.
Sam's kind of, I kind of love yeah, Sam Lester. I think he's kind of a fascinating character.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about where we're going. So you have Omega, which is the last series, miniseries, is coming up. You have Grindhouse, and there's one more one-shot as
well,
right?
The X-Men crossover.
Great.
Oh, man.
Where I'm finally going to get to explore this mutant.
And then it's all a big mutant house boy wet fart in the bathtub.
I kind of feel like a little bit like when you're talking about a mutant that turns into a house, I'm having a big moment. Like, what's fun about playing with a house? Like, if he turns into a house, then what happens? Then he's like, paint me.
Are you?
Hey, listen.
Paint me.
Listen. It should be pointed out, Marvel did pass on it. No one said that they made the wrong decision. But if you've read a lot of Neil Gaiman, you've read, you know, Books of Magic, and so you remember seeing Baba Yaga's house, you know, and so I love the idea of the house getting up on its legs and just
the chicken feet
away,
just running away.
Big chicken feet moving.
Yeah, you could have Beak live in this mutant house.
You should have it do some
specific reference.
That was such an obscure reference. I have no idea what you're talking about.
Don't worry about it. He has chicken feet. It's unimportant. There's a couple of questions that we have from people on Twitter.
Yeah,
okay,
sounds good.
If you don't mind, I'm going to try to find. The first question is, somebody wrote, what is Twitter? Which is
really... No, just etched that into your iPad.
That's super meta.
Let's see. Here we go. Okay, can you tease anything about... This is from JSA1036. Can you tease anything about the superhero comic you and Gabe are working on?
Oh, yeah.
No, not really. Gabe, I feel a guilt and shame about some of the things I have forced Gabe to draw over the last few years. And this is a man who barely knows his family anymore because he spent so much time locked in his studio. And the whole reason Gabe got into comics was just to have the chance to draw a fucking dude in a cape. It's all he ever wanted. So we've talked a lot, and I promised him after Lock and Key is done, we can do a cape comic. We've had some conversations with someone who owns one of the licensed characters. I don't want to say whether it's Marvel or DC, but we've had some conversations, and we've sort of received provisional approval to tackle a certain character. And we'll probably do that for 5 or 6 issues before we go into our next creator-owned thing.
Oh, cool. So let's say he has a cape. He or she has a
cape. This isn't the cape thing that had your name on it.
Not the cape.
Okay.
No, this is not.
He keeps talking about capes, but it's not.
This is a character, for example, like, you know. You know, I'm trying.
Go on.
You know, like Wonder Girl, you know, or something like that. You know, only it's not the character with the
blue window. So let's safely say it's not Wonder Girl, though,
yeah, it's
right?
Not
because
Wonder
you wouldn't have said it otherwise.
Off the list.
Right. So cool.
Yeah.
Check that out. That's cool. We just broke some news.
Now,
you know, one thing. I don't think that Catalina, the Gabe's wife, would be down with him drawing the boob window in panel after panel.
Power Girl off the list.
Yep.
One of the
here we go.
Why
what other characters have a boob window?
Wait.
One of the reasons why I think Lock and Key has done well as an independent comic is because it hasn't slammed the door on female readers. You know, the female characters have believable proportions and wear believable clothes and make believable decisions.
Take it easy.
And I largely think that that's because for two reasons. The first is, even though you see a lot of nudity in most horror films, boobs are not frightening.
Agree to disagree.
I beg to differ.
Boobs are not scary.
They're beautiful.
And the other thing is I think Gabe lives in fear of Catalina, and if he, you know, if there was, you know, if there was too many flopping boobs, there'd probably be, you know, in trouble with her. So
I also think that it's just, you know, it's an amazing comic. So regardless of who you are, you're drawn to it. You know, yeah. I think sometimes people get a little carried away with the, you know, women don't like certain things, you know, a little bit. So I don't want to.
Well, now, wait a minute.
Pete is a big spokesman for women in comics.
Yeah,
so.
Right. No. I think that a lot of female readers are totally okay with overt displays of female sexuality in comics. It's the difference between being in control of it and just being there to provide it.
Exactly.
Right. You know, and
I think it's smart writing is smart writing. Great art is great art. So regardless of, you know, I mean, if you're being a douchebag, you know, it's not going to.
I think a lot of both genders are going to jump all over the comic that we're going to be doing for Marvel Captain. No, it's I think it's Mistress Wonderthong.
No, that's good.
You know, I predict a big following for that one.
Cool.
I know. I'm curious to hear her origin.
This is a question from Blair K77, which I'm going to assume is an inside joke of some sort. When does the poor corgi get couch privileges?
Poor corgi.
I think that's probably a reference to my dog McMurtry, who's you know, is sort of like my sidekick for, you know, when I write and it's under the desk, and so, and he's never going to get couch rights. However, a corgi features prominently in the plot of Lock and Key Grindhouse.
Really?
And we'll also. Well, maybe I better not say anything about that. There's Gabe and I have started to experiment with standalone stories set in the Lock and Key world, and there will be more standalones. There will be eventually enough to fill, about 6 issues worth of them to fill a book that will come out after Lock and Key Omega.
Focused on this 6 number, I noticed.
Yeah, well, I think that makes it. I think it makes a satisfying sized book. That mm-hmm. If you don't have around 6, and you charge people a lot of money, sometimes they feel a little ripped off, rightly. And I think that once you start going much past 6, then you wind up with like I hate. And a lot of people have asked if there's going to be a Lock and Key omnibus. Personally, I hate omnibuses. You know, because these big, you know, things that you can't, big phone books that you can't actually read. And sort of unpleasant. I also really dislike Marvel did an omnibus edition of the black and white Dracula comics that came out in the 70s, the magazine sized ones, and they inked out all the bare flesh, you know, and they were mature comics, and I is Marvel going to come with me to my next trip to the museum and stick tape over, you know,
they
probably
like that? I mean,
hopefully.
Yeah. That would be fun.
Smut.
I mean, it's Gene Colan's art. It's Gene Colan's art. I kind of thought it was nice before someone came in with the ink.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
it's like E.T. They replaced guns with, you know, walkie-talkies. Nobody likes that.
Spielberg admitted it was a mistake.
Yeah. Well, but E.T. also, in the original edition, he had huge boobs.
Yeah. Well, also, those guns shot boobs. I don't know.
It was real scary.
Yeah.
With ideas like that, you could write for, you know, the big 2, no problem.
Nailed it.
Last thing that I wanted to ask you, the Lock and Key pilot, I know it's probably maybe potentially a sore subject, but
I can't wait for season 2. Season 1 was so, I know a lot of people are unhappy about the...
I did see the pilot last year at San Diego, and I thought it was great. Do you feel like, is there any hope of ever seeing anything in another medium of Lock and Key again?
Yes, yeah. I do. I think that there was Mark Romanek, who directed Never Let Me Go, One Hour Photo, and some, you know, and definitely the hottest but most upsetting Nine Inch Nails video of all time. you know, he directed a 1 hour pilot of Lock and Key. It was written by Josh Friedman. Some great performances in it, especially from Skylar Gettner, who plays Bodhi, and is just this incredibly, so not like a TV kid, you know, so like a real kid, which makes the things that happen to him very scary and stuff. They came out with a movie quality pilot. I mean, I know I'm invested in it, so I'm not the most unbiased person, but I thought it was strong in almost exactly the same way Super 8 was strong. Very like 80s Spielberg Poltergeist. Fox passed on it because they felt that it was too dark.
What?
I hear they just approved a Hannibal Lecter TV series. So I see that they're moving in a sunnier direction.
Yeah. He starts a band, so it's different. It's like a Glee.
Yeah, it's like Glee,
Zooey
but with more.
Zooey Deschanel moves in with him after.
Yeah, oh, and she is just the darlingest.
They share fava beans in the evening. Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah.
So, I do think that there's still a good chance that there will be... You know, there will be some sort of TV or movie future for Lock and Key. Conversations that continued about it. The whole creative team involved with it still wants it to happen.
Nice.
So we'll see. Okay. I think that we've got a decent shot, so we'll see.
Wow. All right. Cool. That's good news.
Yeah. Sounds good. All right, guys, we're going to move on with our next section, which we like to call The Stack.
Yeah!
All right, and in The Stack, each of us has made a pick, some particular comic book we like this week, so we're going to go to bat for it. First thing we're going to talk about, Pete's pick, Irredeemable, number 37 from
Irredeemable.
Pass that over to you. So this is the last issue of Mark Waid's series about a Superman gone bad. Pete, what did you like about this?
Yeah.
Well, you know, final issue, which final issue, which is kind of sad. Mark Waid did an amazing job in the series, and I was very interested to see how it was going to end. I thought it ended in a really good way. I didn't feel upset like we were talking before. I didn't think it was a fart in the water. And I felt like he did a really great job, and it felt honest, and it really felt true to what he started out with. So I thought it was definitely a
Justin,
hell of a run.
Justin, what kind of fart did you think it was?
A silent but deadly fart in the world. I've never read a single issue of this, so I jumped on for the final.
What'd you think?
A lot of new characters. I'm surprised he brought in so many new characters for the end. A lot of... So I don't know where he's going to take it next is the only thing. Like, not much of a cliffhanger. It's a good issue. I mean, I feel like you see a lot of like sort of Superman analogs in the world these days, world of comics. And if I may, should I spoil the ending or at least talk about it?
Don't talk about it at all.
Oh boy.
Sorry. I don't know. When do people read comics? Like 20 years from now? How's it happen? So I'm dying in 20 years. Come to my deathbed and we'll talk about this comic.
About Irredeemable 37.
Yeah. I just want to say I really like his costume with the arrow on the chest. It's like the cock is down here.
Yeah. That's his catchphrase. I don't know if you read the issue.
Like the male analog.
Man and the legend.
Yeah. You know,
the old cock is there.
This is a really good series. It started out as a Superman gone bad riff, but it really transcended that nicely. It's too bad we can't talk about the ending, you guys, because it's a little ridiculous.
It's a little ridiculous. It's real cocky.
Or...
That's not a pun on what you were just saying.
Yeah,
it's just
yeah,
like,
it is.
It's just like, really? So that's all we,
well,
I guess, we'll
say. Wait a minute. What do you know saying? Was it good or not?
The issue, the end, specifically?
People want information from this show.
Oh,
well,
boy.
It's harder. We can't talk about it.
You can tell if it was good or not.
True. I thought it was too much. I was sort of like turned off by that.
Yeah,
end.
But if you know about Mark Waid, he's kind of obsessed with Superman. He knows a lot about it. So I thought it was a little bit of a nice tip of the hat to be like, hey, this is how Superman.
Don't say anything else.
Yeah. All right, let's move on since obviously we can't talk about this. Let's instead talk about something I'm sure we also can't talk about. Batman Incorporated, number one from DC Comics.
Yeah.
Justin, this was your pick. What did you like about this?
Now, I sort of have felt like Grant Morrison's Batman in the last couple years has been truly insane and very hard to read. It's just like all these characters who you
Weird.
Don't really know.
You think Grant Morrison's writing is a little crazy in the pants?
Well, but a lot of people...
crazy in the pants.
A lot of people still like it. A lot of people are like, oh, this is a great issue. And I want to be like, tell me one thing that happened in that issue. When they're like, oh, the Batman from Zur-En-Arr fought a Batman who is inside a microchip. And you're like, what? Is that how does that fight go? I don't know. But there's a lot of great... The art's... He always has great artists, and it's always really cool. This issue, I feel like, sort of boils out some of the craziest stuff, sort of... It's a nice Batman comic. There's some great Robin stuff that happens in here. Nice cliffhanger at the end, and the art by Chris Burnham, I believe, is awesome. So I love this comic.
Yeah, it's a great team up. I really think that...
it's a great team up. Batman and Robin.
I met the writer and the artist.
Oh.
Yeah, writer and the artist.
Who would have thought?
Joe, I'm curious. I know you didn't necessarily get a chance to read this issue, but... do you have a favorite Batman story? Is there some particular run you
thought
Batman
you were going
really
to say, do I have a favorite Batman? I was about to say, you know, no one's really done him as well as Adam West. I
mean, nice. Yeah.
You know, do I have a favorite Batman story? You know, I like Neil Gaiman's. I thought, whatever happened to the Caped Crusader was a beautiful, imaginative, you know, fun, you know, nutty, you know, crazy pants story. Neil Gaiman said a thing where he said, you know, when you take over a character like this, you want to tell one story that only you could have told. And I really feel like, I mean, you know, that's a story only Neil Gaiman could have.
Follow-up question. What's your Batman story? Do you have one that you're, like, burning to tell?
Yeah, ooh. I got a great idea for a Batman
ooh.
Story.
All right, just write it here.
Right now.
With your mouth. With your words.
Wayne Manor is a guy.
Yeah.
And Batman's like, my God, we're in his butt.
Yeah. You know,
I'm just throwing that out there.
You're saying Grant Morrison's all crazy. I'm like, I don't know. This looks pretty normal. I get to page three. There's like Batman fighting the goat-headed guy and the slaughterhouse. I'm like, oh, yeah, okay, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
I do. There's a really nice moment in here where Rabin adopts a cow and says, this will be our bat cow.
Yeah.
Like, cool.
He says, the cow's face is unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, he just became bat cow. Imagine if...
not really.
Imagine if someone came here and said, you're now out of shape Batman.
That's all I've ever wanted to be.
can I just not to start a little bit of a fight here?
Let's do this.
That's what we live for.
Can I just say that I think the Marvel films bury the Christopher Nolan Batman?
Oh, I agree completely with you. I mean, in fact, having seen
Avengers,
I hear Avengers,
some rumbles out there, but I mean, it's just like really.
What are you saying right now?
Does Batman got to be the Godfather? And what's up with the voice? I mean, Christian Bale is like he's always on the can. He's
got a very tight butthole.
Well, you got to disguise your voice,
like,
and no
Sphincter
one knows
Man.
When you talk regular.
You know, I've said this a couple times since seeing Avengers that, like, my anticipation for the Batman movie has gone so far down. Wow. Like, seeing Avengers and seeing the trailer where it's just, like, everyone's miserable.
What is everybody's memory just gone out? Do you remember how amazing the last Batman movie was?
Yes, it was. I only just got out of it. It was so long.
Yeah.
It's like 8.5 hours long. You know? And it's like,
there are, like,
eight,
seven
and a half
plus.
Hours perfect is what it is.
Eight really? And a half hours short.
Says I will Pete. Agree with you, the voice. I think every time in the trailer for Dark Knight Rises, I was like, all right, this looks good. And then they cut to Christian Bale. He's like,
and especially they
but
have
Bane's voice is great.
Well, yeah. I was going to say, Christian Bale's voice is so crazy, the Bane voice has to be totally incomprehensible.
Yeah, yeah.
And just like someone scratching.
I wish they had. I wish Anne Hathaway had a ridiculous voice, too. I wish it was like,
oh,
it's two guys talking, dubbing her voice.
Best superhero film flat out is Chronicle.
Yes.
I still haven't seen it. Wow. It was really
Chronicle.
Good.
Chronicle is the best superhero great film, movie. Not just of the year ever. Chronicle's
really?
The best.
Really? Yeah.
Chronicle's the best superhero.
Why do you
film
say
ever
that?
Because
you talking about Chronicles of Narnia? Is that what you're saying?
Because it's
Chronicles
smart,
of Riddick.
Because it's smart and it's real, and you get emotionally tangled up in these characters. Because basically, Chronicle is the best superhero film ever because of the talent show scene. And there is nothing that human, that awesome, that, you know, that smart in any other superhero film.
Wow.
You know, not that that sort of like
that
which just feels so natural, just like not like a $50 million CGI set piece. You know, just. Like
well,
real kids.
I mean, they found that footage, according to the movie.
All right.
So, like, that makes it
it's a documentary
more real, yeah.
All right, we're going to move on with my pick, which was Chew number 26 from Image Comics. Now, I will say, I'm usually okay with Chew.
Yeah, you're not a big fan.
I like it, but I don't love it. I'm
now,
not
do you like this because Chew wasn't in it, and you were like, yeah.
Yeah, that's totally possible. but I would say I love this issue of Chew in particular. I think it always has crazy ideas. It's always very funny, but it doesn't really feel very emotionally grounded. And here we get Chew, the main character, who he's a cheapopath. He can bite things and sense their history. Here, his sister, who can bite people and tell the future, and his brother, who is just a chef, team up to
just a chef. How dare you?
What he can do with eggs and toast is amazing.
Yeah.
All right, I'm sorry. I don't have the palate you guys do. Yeah.
That's for goddamn right.
Yeah.
Anyway, they team up to take down this guy who stole paintings that if you lick them, they taste delicious. And it's very funny throughout. It's a good little heist thing, but it shows the relationship between these two characters that haven't really gotten much into the spotlight before, and it's very enjoyable. It was definitely my favorite of the week. What did you guys think?
This was the first issue of Chew, I think.
Where is
so,
it? What?
I don't know. These are two comics that I just don't read. Let me get this straight. Chicken doesn't exist on this world?
No, it's illegal.
Why?
Bird flu.
Oh, and NASA runs shit.
Yep.
And that's the only two things that are different.
Well,
that's an unclear
answer.
There's
a lot that's different. I just
What's
described
so hard
it.
For you to grasp?
I described it as
people can fly.
In the real world, people can't bite people and sense their future.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
what?
I'll tell you later.
So, I don't know. I was sort of, I didn't know quite which character, I didn't know about the missing character. But, like, it's sort of a funny, I didn't think it was super funny. So I guess that's
what
you
just said.
It's funny.
I didn't know it was super funny.
Yeah, that's what I mean. That's a different, you know how there are regular people and super people? Was in between.
I just love how we read comic books all the time and people fly and kill people and shoot lasers. You pick up Chew and you're like, what?
This could
no
never
chick.
Happen.
Well, no.
There's no chicken?
Well, it's like, it's just illegal, Pete, as we established. But it seems very arbitrary to be like, the world I want to create NASA gets a bunch of props. Chicken gets no love. Like, what happened to this dude?
There's nothing arbitrary about being bitten by a radioactive spider.
Well, I know.
Yes!
But it's one thing, and then that's the crazy thing. This has two crazy things, and then there's the
character. Hold on. Peter Parker being bitten by a radioactive spider is the only crazy thing in Spider-Man.
Yeah. Well, no, that's the beginning, and then it
and his parents came back as robots. And...
You're really digging yourself into it.
What about the doctor who's an octopus?
I'm familiar with...
Or the doctor who's a lizard.
Huh?
Or the other doctor who was bitten by a radioactive doctor and became a super doctor.
He's the only doctor I would go to in the Marvel Universe.
He's really good.
But the story's about a person that bites people and can understand things about their lives. The chicken thing is such a left turn.
What about a guy who's a reporter, when he takes off his glasses, nobody knows who he is?
Yeah, but that's not part of the story. It's not like
I'm
they sat there and they
a
were
lot
like
of suspension.
Pete,
of disbelief.
Take off your glasses.
Are you saying
where'd Pete go?
Are you saying that Siegel and Schuster mistrusted glasses?
Yeah.
So anyway, great comic. Thanks.
All right, that's it for the stack, guys. We are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you guys out there made it up. It's your audience questions. For that, we're going to go to Boothman.
First
of all, Boothman, how does it feel to be actually back in a booth?
Oh, you know.
No,
it's cool. I like it.
Okay, let's get the first question.
Oh, all right.
Enough about you.
Yep. First question is for Joe. Where do you land on the whole creator-owned versus Marvel DC debate with many creators? That's a different thing. Notable creators renouncing the big two. Will you be... And also, will you be purchasing before Watchmen?
Mm. Wow. Ooh. That's a lot of...
Okay, there's a few things to unpack there. Yeah. But the first thing is I don't think that my opinion matters because something is happening in comics that can't be reversed, which is, you know, a few publishers have started to say, we just want to publish your books like an ordinary publisher, and you'll keep the film rights and the game rights and the action figure rights and all the rest of it, and, you know, go with God. We're just going to be a publisher like the, you know, I have a day job writing novels, and you know, it was never even discussed that the publisher would somehow own those characters and be able to hire someone else to write a sequel or you know, take those and go make a movie, because it's just understood that's not how it is in publishing. Comic books has this sort of perverse throwback philosophy to the 50s, you know, that somehow if you publish a writer or an artist, then you're going to own their work forever and own all their good ideas. And that whole way of doing business is slipping away so rapidly that it will probably almost completely vanish in the next 5 years. Marvel and DC will continue to have their property, their creative real estate. But new ideas like Walking Dead, you know, those are going to publishers who are willing to let the creators keep their rights. So in a way, you know, I don't feel like my opinion matters. It's at this point, that's how the rights are flowing, and there's no way to turn it back. As far as before Watchmen goes, I mean, you know, I think it's awesome. I'm actually working on before Watchmen.
nice.
In it, there's like a Rosart sperm who like punches out the other sperm, and he's like, you know, this ovary is a dead dog running in the street. These fallopian tubes are filthy. You know, and no, I think it's.
I think your voice is very over the
it's,
top.
It's a little
it really
over the
pulled
top.
Me out
it's
of
a little over the top.
Yeah.
I think it's horrifying. I mean, I think it's really gross. There are lots of creators working on Before Watchmen who I adore, and I'll keep buying their work and stuff. But I think, you know, I think it's like a bad joke. I just don't understand. I also think, you know, people tend to make fun of Alan Moore's passions, you know, and when he, you know, decides to the new Lock and Key is dedicated to Alan Moore and Neil Gaiman. And a friend of mine joked that Alan Moore was going to have his name taken off the dedication placed by his, you know, but the thing is I have great sympathy with Alan Moore's point of view. They promised him one thing and they didn't give it. You know, no wonder he feels betrayed, and this is sort of even worse. I mean, this is like before Citizen Kane, you know?
Yeah.
It's gross. Yeah. So, it's a bad idea.
They would be like building the sled.
It is.
Spoiler.
Hey, yeah, geez.
Yeah.
Dude, wow. Geez.
That movie is only a million years old.
Yeah.
It was the first movie.
It was.
Well, it wasn't. I mean, it wasn't quite the first film, but I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
There were actually some. There were a few films.
No, I'm pretty sure it was the first movie.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
All right, we're going to get the next question.
Okay, next question. Which comic book character do you want as a drinking buddy?
Oh, nice.
Oh, boy.
This is Wolverine, because he would sober up fast and drive us home.
Real logistical answer to that question. Would you guys talk, or you just be like, hey, bub, I want to go home now.
Yeah, well, what do I need to talk? You know, I'm not going to talk about my feelings with Wolverine. Just want to, you know.
What do you do when you drink with
people? Yeah, you talk about your feelings, Pete, when you
drink? You just drink.
And in silence.
How can anyone pick anything besides Scarlet Witch? Wouldn't it be great to go drinking with Scarlet Witch?
Wait. Hold up. Why? You love her.
She's so cute. You know, she's smart. And she's smart and funny. She's got class and stuff. And she looks good in the cape. Who would want to go
good in the
her?
Cape? What about her weird, like, doesn't she have the little weird thing that
hovers
here?
Wouldn't you like to see her let her hair down, though?
Yeah. So you don't want to go for have a beer with her. You want to, like, have sex with her.
Who wants to have a beer with
her? Who wants to have a beer with anybody unless you're going to have sex with them?
We're having beers right now.
Who wants to go have, like, a beer with Cyclops? You know, it's like,
nobody
starts drinking, burning holes in the ceiling and stuff like that. And, I mean, you know, or, like, Wolverine, who probably, like, I mean, like, it's cool. Like, everyone loves Wolverine and stuff, but, like, how do you think the dude smells? You know, guy probably smells like day three SDC. You know, SDCC. You know, just ugh. You know,
I'm sure he showers.
You're sure? You're sure he showers? Have you ever seen him?
You know,
yeah, that's what I want to see. I want to see an X-Men comic.
My theory is they don't call him Wolverine for nothing. Okay, yeah. It's like
he stinks. Like Wolverine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Just was wondering if maybe Wolverines regularly take showers or something.
I think they should release a book where all the Marvel characters shower, just so we know. Yeah. Just so we know who's doing it.
They did do the swimsuit issue.
Yeah, great collectible. I remember that.
I love Namor's, like, doesn't he have, like, the seashell, like, you know, he has the
Wearing, in that issue, he was wearing a full bodysuit.
That, talk collectibles.
Yeah.
You know.
That's an uncomfortable way to spend your life.
They could move a lot of seashell cod pieces at
This is the second show in a row where somebody has brought up seashell cod pieces.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, specifically Namers. Not a lot of people wear them.
No, just in general, for the season.
I didn't rip it off. I never watched this crap.
Ooh.
Justin, what's your answer?
I'm angry now.
Cool. Let's get the next question.
All right, Silver Surfer.
All right.
This is my answer.
Drink?
Yeah, oh, you big drinker.
Oh, stop.
You ever hung out with a regular surfer? You think the Silver Surfer's any different?
Probably drinks Coors
Light. I'll tell you what.
He's high all the time.
Speaking of cosplay, okay, I saw Silver Surfer at, like, one of the conventions and stuff. Like, completely, he was wearing, like, the bikini bottom, and he was, like, slicked in the silver and stuff. And I'll tell you what. I would have said it takes balls to wear that costume. But, you know, based on the evidence. I'm kind of thinking maybe not so much.
No, it takes balls to wear that costume.
Boothman, you got a next question for us?
Of course I do. What are the three best comics I'm not reading?
Okay, just shout every comic you're reading. Yeah. And we'll tell you what to add to the list.
Batman, Superman. That's it.
Well, hopefully you know about Concrete.
Amazing.
I'd say
comic.
That would be the first
amazing,
thing.
Amazing building supply.
Raise your hand if you ask that, not to put you on the spot. Are you reading Concrete?
Of course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Goodman. Are you talking more superhero or sort of more indie?
Everything.
Oh, nice. Ooh. Out of the box, that's where I live.
I'd recommend Irredeemable Batman Incorporated and Chew.
Good. That's literally the only box that you could be inside right now.
Yes.
Saga.
Except for Pete's going through Saga. Great comic.
You know? Saga's amazing. Yeah, you better be reading Saga.
Whoa.
You don't have to threaten.
I'm always running a couple years behind. You know, like, I'm always, like, it's, you know, it's 2012. I'm stuck in, like, 2010 in terms of, so, like, you know, Echo.
Yeah,
it's finished, but a lot of people still haven't experienced
it. It's great.
It. So,
it's good.
You know, and if you, it's like the best 80s science fiction film that's was never made. You know, like Starman or Close Encounters, and it also I contend it is the best comic ever about a woman shooting laser beams from her boobs.
Spoiler. Let us think on that for a while.
Yeah,
boobs are scary.
Yeah, I would say there's a. this guy Jason, who does a series of sort of short. Yeah. Have you read that? That's
no, little,
oh, that's very good. His stuff's very good, sort of bleak, very spare, nice. Yeah. Really cool. Stuff that's not superhero either.
Yeah. I've been reading this thing called Lights Booth. It's like real indie, you guys. You probably haven't heard of it, but you should check it out.
Oh, wow!
Lights
no one's
Booth,
heard. That's
Bar,
a really, that's
Fontana's.
The coolest. Yeah, good.
Yeah,
great choice.
Cool. Thanks.
There's a guy named Tom Gold who does hardcovers mostly. He did, and he's a lot like Edward Gorey. And I don't know if he counts as a. I don't know if he's doing comic books or. Picture books, or what you want to call them, it's images and words in a sequential story. So it kind of seems a little bit like
works for
books,
me.
But he doesn't have word balloons or anything. And I definitely think Tom Gold is great the way Edward Gorey was great, and it's sort of worth a look if you really want to veer way off the beaten track. He's interesting.
Cool.
There's a comic called Fear Agent by Rick Remender. That is also ended, but that's very, very good. Sort of a hard drinking space.
We were
space
talking about this on the show
type.
The other week, but there's a title that's just started at Dark Horse called Alabaster Wolves.
Yeah,
that to
amazing.
Me feels like Fear Agent, but for horror instead of sci-fi. It's great. Definitely pick it up.
There's a little indie thing too. It's about this team of guys with not all guys, but with remarkable talents. There's one guy who wears like a metal suit, and there's another guy who like freaks out and gets big and stuff like that.
Huh.
Stuff.
Weird.
And, it's one of these things where I wish more people were exposed to it, heard about it, and stuff.
Probably not.
What a
probably not.
In that world, what's going on with the chicken?
Yeah, great point. Yeah, that guy thanks. That freaks out, is he 3 years old? Because if he's not, I'm not interested in reading it.
Older, you know, but good
bullshit.
Good series. Good series.
Cool. That's it?
No, I've got a bunch more questions, but...
No. Let's go into a lightning round. So okay. First answer is correct.
All right. Which comic book character would you fight to the death and why, and would you win?
I would choose one that I would likely win. To fight?
Yeah, I'm going to go with my stock answer, Cypher, who I love, but I think I'd win.
How would you guys kill each other?
Yeah, how would you beat
Cypher? By, through boredom?
Crying.
The extreme crying.
Crying.
Dehydration
extreme
through crying.
Crying.
We'd both be throwing punches and be like, no.
Wow.
That's pretty much it.
All right. Looking forward to that issue of X-Men Unlimited.
Next question.
This is for Mr. Hill.
Okay.
Why did you choose to write Lock and Key as a comic, and how has this affected the writing?
Well, because it began as a comic book pitch, I always saw it as a comic book. And because I have a comic book imagination, I always, you know, a lot of my stories, I think of, you know, I'll flirt back and forth between, you know, would this be good as a novel? Would this be good as a comic? You know, in terms of how it's changed my writing style, you know, originally I would do 8 drafts of a script, and I would obsess over
wow.
it, and these intricate descriptions, and actually in the sort of this leather bound oversized edition of Lock and Key, and it's got all the scripts in the back of it.
The omnibus Lock and Key.
It's not an omnibus, but it is big.
It's just short of being an omnibus.
But over time, I've become so close with Gabe, and we, you know, we have this thing going. Usually I can finish a script in just a draft or two, and mm-hmm. I know exactly what I need to talk about and what I don't, because Gabe will fill in the rest. And, you know, and he has – you know, he just – he's not – I sometimes say about Gabe, he's not an illustrator. He's writing. He's writing as much as I am. It's just instead of his paragraphs or panels, he has this. There's a wonderful panel in Clockwork 6 where, without ruining anything, where this one character is holding a jar and writing on it, and it's supposed to be, the word is supposed to be emergency, but she's not finished writing it, and what she's written is emerge. And that's all Gabe. And it's just this, I saw it, I thought, oh, geez. Because if you know what happens
awesome.
To the stuff in this, the contents of this jar in a different story, you know that that's just creepy. And that wasn't in the script, that's just Gabe.
Oh, man, and English is his second language.
English is, that's right. Yeah.
So to be able to be hitting those puns, like, that's a straight up pun.
Yeah, he's tremendously fluent. And I think like a lot of people who have multiple languages, he's better at reading it.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe he can't verbalize as although he's very, you know, he's very fluent, but maybe he can't articulate as well as he can pull information in.
Yeah. It almost seems now that like he's just carrying you on this project.
He has really been carrying me. I actually haven't written a script for 10 issues. I do some word balloons at the end.
One more question?
Yeah. Do
one more question. Let's do it.
If you had a head key, what character would you expunge?
Oh shit.
Man. Oh, man.
Expunge or explore?
Whichever, whatever you want, buddy.
Joe, do you have an answer for that?
Expunge, get rid of. Yeah.
From Lock and Key, or from like from,
no, from your own head,
whatever
your
own, you
head.
Want.
Your own head, your own.
Anyone
yeah, what would you take
ever
out of your own head?
Yeah.
If the head.
Oh, yeah. What would I take
in,
out?
In the comic book Lock and Key, there's a key called the head key, and what it yeah. does, it could. Oh,
Joe, listen yeah. up. This is important.
Okay. No. The right, yeah. That you put it in the back of your neck, and you open up your head, and it opens up the inner world of your thoughts, and you can take things out, put things in. But see, like, I'm like the creator of the comics, so I know it's a really bad idea. And yeah. you don't want to take anything out.
Which one would you take out?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing. I wouldn't fool with it. It's not.
It's an intricate system of, yeah.
And
checks
everyone
and balances.
Who stuffs stuff into their heads thinks they're learning, but it's you don't absorb stuff the same way that you do when you actually think for yourself. It's almost
okay.
like a message. Like,
oh, no. Oh, it makes you think.
Don't do drugs.
I think I would take this moment out and then be like, cool, what should I take out?
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I take out a memory this whole evening.
Right.
No.
Oh.
All right.
I'd put in a radical dude.
Dude, just
put in like a more radical dude.
Right. Like a skateboard, just take
so
a skateboard.
I would put the Silver Surfer in my head.
Pete, what about you?
I would like to take out the angry Hulk version of me that runs around in my brain, but...
There'd be nothing left.
Yeah, there'd be nothing left.
Phantom Menace. Take out Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Wow.
Is
that a character in your head?
If you took out the Phantom Menace, you'd be like, there's another stain. Star Wars? Then yeah. I should go check
like,
that
I
out.
I can't wait. Deb, you realize, I know like everyone loves Star Wars and, you know, that it's still like people still care and have their action. But do you realize that those stories have basically sucked since about like 1980? You know, I mean, like people think like, oh, the old prequel was great. The first one was great. Nah, come on. I mean, the first two were great. Return was stale.
All right.
And then there were, like, the Ewok films, you know? Like, I mean, I think at this stage we got to say that there is more of Star Wars like the Ewok films than there were, like, you know, Irwin Kirshner, you know, Kirshner's, you know, Empire Strikes Back. We have one fluke film, Empire, and then, like, a lot of Ewok adventures and droids.
Ewok Christmas changed my life.
That's it for your audience questions.
Yeah.
All right. Guys...
For the worst, right?
Yeah. Okay, we are going to go ahead with our next section, which is trivia. And for that, we're going to turn it over to Peter LePage.
Guys, this is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free in the form of a gift card to Midtown Comics. Who would like $25? You in the way back, sir. Come on down. Yeah. You got to keep clapping. He's far away. He's far away.
Yes.
Okay, hello. Sir, what is your name?
I'm Jerry.
Jerry, audience? Jerry. Audience, Jerry.
Hi, Jerry. Hello.
All right. Jerry, how this is going to work is I'm going to read you a question. You're going to listen to all three possible answers.
Right.
And then you will win a gift card. If he goes 3 for 3.
Okay. All right.
All right, here we go. So today's...
No matter what.
Today's trivia... is about one of the greatest comics of all time, Lock and Key. Aww. All right? Thank you, Boothman. Use the music. It helps. Which is not a title of one of the 6 story arcs in Lock and Key? Is it A, Head Games, B, Crown of Shadows, or is it C, The River Bottom Nightmare Band? So it's either A, which is actually a story arc, so don't name that one, or it's B, don't name that one either, or I would go with C.
Is it C?
C, the River Bottom Nightmare Band. Nobody asked me, but that's what I would have named one. All right. What is the name of one, just got named one villain in this comic? Is it A, Dodge, B, Tyler, or C, Mojo Jojo? So it's either A, which is what you should go with.
Is it A?
A is correct!
Nice!
Okay, last question. Don't get cocky. Here we go. The first storyline of Act 3 was initially announced as Time and Tide, but is now titled what? Is it A, Keys to the Kingdom, B, Clockworks, or is it C, hey, somebody help, the bad guy is winning, for Christ's sakes? So it's either A, it's B.
It's B then?
B, Clockwork is correct. $25, $3. Congratulations,
good
Jerry.
Good job. Great, good job. Oh, fist bump, okay.
Fist bump, that's cool.
Yeah, that is pretty cool.
Yep.
All right, guys.
Cool thing.
It's a real cool thing your kids are doing these days. Guys, as we all know, tomorrow is New Comic Book Day. We recommend you go to Midtown Comics because they've been nice enough to sponsor the show. Pete, what are you looking forward to?
I'm looking forward to Batman Annual number one. Scott Snyder is doing an amazing job on Batman, and I don't ever want him to stop.
Yeah.
Except to hear your,
True fact about Scott Snyder, he used to play Buzz Lightyear at Disney.
What?
Seriously?
You just blew my
now,
mind.
Now he's like, now he's like the Man of Darkness. He's like, Captain Scary. But once he was Buzz.
So
just keep in mind, Captain Scary was Buzz once. Okay?
He does have buttons in his chest.
He's got a big, Scott loves Elvis. And he used to do.
Are you making this stuff
up? I'm not. And he used to do like a Buzz Lightyear Elvis thing.
Seriously?
For money.
At Disney World?
For pay.
Who wanted anyone to do that?
I do over here.
Elvis, Buzz Lightyear?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That explains why in Batman is always saying to infinity and beyond. So
that's true.
Justin, what are you looking forward to?
Walking Dead, I feel like, has been doing very well lately. Huh?
What's that?
It's a comic book based on a TV show called
Spinoffs.
Yeah, exactly. It's really fun. Great Dallas comic book I'm hoping for coming out soon.